coming up on podcast 1236, EV batteries continue their price decline. But by how much? Stick around. We're going to find out today. Also on the show today, this chip shortage we hear so much about, why it's not a problem for Tesla as much as the others, but why supply shortages are actually good for electric vehicles, according to one theory, and wireless charging debuting on a brand new Genesis. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. It's Wednesday, 6th of October. My name is Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story so you don't have to. Welcome to a new member of the Patreon family, and that'll be you, John. John E. Avanson is a brand new Patreon producer, and you can sign up as well and be part of the gang at patreon.com, patreon.com/EVNewsDaily. Get your ad-free feed at whatever level you sign up to. Obviously, if it's executive producer and above, you get your name in the show notes every day, but either way, everyone on Patreon gets their ad-free feed to plug into your podcast app. So we'll start with this story about passenger vehicles actually being impacted by the supply shortages with semiconductors, the critical little chips that are used in modern cars coming from Asia, and car makers are having to ration them as they choose which ones they fit them in. Now, Matthias Schmidt, the auto analyst I mentioned yesterday, had a theory on this, and I really like it, so I'm going to bring it to you very quickly now. And his thought is that with the tough EU emissions targets on the table, many car makers are balancing their carbon books, if you like, increasing their sales mix of plug-in vehicles. Germany and France both recording new sales highs recently, and those big SUVs, the Luxo barges, if you like, that turn heads and turn profits as well, are still being sold. But in order to compensate for that, car makers are selling more electric vehicles in order to avoid those CO2 emissions fines. Volkswagen's MEB platform, made in Zwickau, Cupra's Born was the latest model to join the lineup last month, and the daily production rate trend of that has been presented in an investor relations presentation earlier in September. They were showing how many pure electric cars are coming out of Zwickau, and battery electric vehicles are not being impacted by the chip shortage. It's causing a rising sales mix for their premium end models, and consequently in their profit margins as well. On the actual volumes, battery electric vehicles will soak up about 10% of the total sales market. Add in plug-in hybrids, and you'll get another 10% of the market in Europe over the course of this year. Now, obviously, there's 3 months to go. But the way it's going, we're expecting every fifth new passenger car by the end of the year that was sold will have a plug socket on the side of it. About 2.22 million vehicles sold this year will have a plug socket on in Western Europe. And many of those are being sold because, A, they're profitable, because the Volkswagen MEB cars are profitable. People always tell me, oh, well, you know, only Tesla makes a profit. Not true. And those are the vehicles which will help avoid fines, because you can offset them. You can sell a big, expensive, luxury SUV, which is not for me, but lots of people do like them, and they do make lots of profit for the car companies. So, yeah, really good news for EVs. Right, let's talk about General Motors wanting to make a profit from software. GM aims to position itself as a tech platform that's focused on software just as much as EVs when they talk to investors soon, including a scheduled rollout of 20 new electric vehicles in the United States over the next few years, says the Autoblog website. They say that GM executives will soon provide a more detailed look at the company's plan to spend $35 billion through 2025 on EVs and give revenue and profit margin growth targets for the five-year period after that, according to people familiar with the plans. They didn't want to be named, though, because this is still confidential information. GM will reveal greater detail around their EV product roadmap coming very soon. GMC Hummer, of course, is coming. There's the EV600 delivery van, the Cadillac Lyriq, and more. That includes plans for electric versions of the Chevy Silverado and the GMC Sierra full-size pickup coming in 2022. According to the sources as well, an industry forecast provided by Auto Forecast Solutions backs this up. Reuters added to this report, and they pointed out that when it comes to software, GM will discuss what its offerings allow it to do financially and how that will make the Detroit company's business less cyclical than auto companies have been historically. Last week, GM introduced branding for its software platform, Ultifi. There you go. It comes in 2023 and discussed building an app store-like approach to making the platform open to third-party developers. Software-oriented products and services are key to GM and, in fact, all the car makers, I would say, sustaining high profit margins as the transition goes from fossil gobbling to electron gobbling. And that is something that all of them, apart from the startups, which have an advantage of, yes, a huge amount of debt, so Tesla, Rivian, Lucid, all very, very well funded, but not having to transition a legacy business where the combustion stuff makes money and the EV stuff is new, do that with software and regular over-the-air updates and maybe even some subscriptions. They're hoping we'll plug the gap. Next, Porsche. And the 718 EV replacement is going to have a midship engine. I presume it's 718, not 718, because I'm not really interested in Porsche's combustion lineup because I get more excited about EV stuff. So, even though electric vehicle makers have more freedom in regard to where they put the motor and the batteries, Porsche wants to stick with their mid-engine design for the upcoming EV replacement. Even though the sports car will be electric, Porsche wants the future Porsche sports cars for the motor to be in the same place where the engine is currently, in the Cayman and the Boxster. It says inside EVs, the goal is to have as much of the vehicle's mass in the center of the vehicle as possible to preserve handling and agility. And they want to make it feel like a current model feels at the moment in terms of driving experience. With the recent Mission R concept at the IAA show recently, Porsche used this platform as a base. Then they electrified it and gave it a futuristic body. CEO of the brand, Oliver Blume, said, and I quote, "When we electrify a model, we won't do a carryover of the combustion engine platform because there are too many compromises. When we are looking to future sports cars, we develop our own platform, but connected with some modules coming from other cars, the platform will be unique," end quote. So there you go. This actually reflects something that I talked about, oh goodness, 2 weeks ago on the podcast. Might have been more, might have been less. And that was the Lotus brand saying exactly the same thing, which is like everyone tells you, oh, the place to put batteries is under the floor of the car because that's the way that, you know, some EV makers do it. They call it the skateboard design. It's the only way to make an EV. And now Porsche saying, like Lotus did, actually, what we really want for our sports cars is to sit as low as possible to the ground, bum just off the tarmac. And to do that, you can't be sitting on a big old battery pack. So don't sit on the batteries, but rather put the batteries behind you, much like, you know, Tesla Roadster version 1. And that, they say, gives the best handling dynamics and characteristics, even though the center of gravity might be higher. They say the weight balance is better. And the, a skateboard design is not the be-all and end-all. And that's really interesting. Now, you know I have an unhealthy obsession with wireless charging. Do we need it? No. Do I want it? Absolutely. What a cool toy. Driving over a pad, your car starts charging like your mobile phone does. Well, Wytricity is the pioneer in wireless charging and announcing that their technology is going to be first available in a factory-installed vehicle. That will be the Genesis GV60, part of Hyundai and Kia. Slightly more premium, the brand Genesis, if you don't know what that is. And it is coming to Europe as well. And so it's going to feature wireless charging as standard. Wytricity, wireless EV charging out of the factory. In the future, in addition to simplicity and reliability, wireless charging has the potential to provide vehicle-to-grid power. Yes, it's bi-directional. So you haven't got to plug anything into your car. You simply drive over a pad in your garage or on your driveway, and your car just starts charging, much like your mobile phone does, except it's bi-directional. And so when the grid is really expensive and busy, it can transfer power out of your car. And for people whose mind slightly is blown by this and thinking, yes, but I'm obviously plugging in is better, it's more efficient. No, it's like 95% efficient, which is, by the way, the same as plugging in a cable, which takes all of 3 seconds. And we don't really need wireless charging, but I really, really want it. It will dynamically charge vehicles when they're in motion as well. Of course, that's indispensable for autonomous vehicles, providing the ability to refuel if we are genuinely going to take human beings out of mobility. Right, coming very soon, we will talk about a chip shortage, but not being such much of an issue for Tesla, and why people aren't betting against Tesla as much as they used to. Stick around, that's on the way. Right, now on the podcast, let's talk about EV battery costs going down. In 2021, they are 87% lower than in 2008, according to research by the Department of Energy and their Vehicle Technologies Office, estimating the cost of an EV battery, the lithium-ion battery pack, declining 87% between 2008 and 2021. The 2021 estimate is they give it a $157 per kilowatt hour usable basis, the equivalent of $143 per kilowatt hour on a rated energy basis for production at scale, i.e. making more than 100,000 batteries a year. Well, that compares to what was $1,237 per kilowatt hour back in 2008. Now, the decline in cost is a combination of improvements in tech and chemistry and manufacturing volume as well. And the price they've given that of $157 per kilowatt hour is probably $100 more than the cheapest EV batteries out there. So that's the price they've given it. And they've obviously, you know, the DOE has obviously done their sums on this. But some of the lithium-ion phosphate LFP battery packs coming out of China, you know, people are saying, oh, if only we could get battery packs below $100 per kilowatt hour. Yeah, they're like $60, $65, $70. I think the lowest is maybe $56, $58. It's incredible, the price drop that's happened with the change in chemistry, the increase of production as well. Any major car makers not having a battery supply contract for LFP, low cost, and probably even low energy batteries for small city cars are not going to be in the game when all of these cars arrive from China. I keep saying it. There's going to be some suffering, you know, if these battery supply contracts are not already in place with major car makers that want to make small, low-range, lightweight city cars, because these are the batteries that are going to enable the EVs to be cheaper than their combustion counterparts. All right, let's move on and talk about the chip shortage in the world. Not a problem so much for Tesla in Q3. The engineering team at Tesla found a way, says Elon Musk, to mitigate it. Tesla has experienced the chip shortage issues like everybody else, but not a problem for the clean energy company, as the engineering team at Tesla found a way around it, focusing on manufacturing, says Tech Times website. According to Morgan Stanley's investor notes, the company had no problems concerning chip shortages because they sourced their own in-house. That being said, Tesla has focused on their microcontrollers, which they can produce, something they have assembled and combined for the vehicles. Now, with these, the company need not source the chips from as many external sources, and this was something that the vehicle maker has focused on for a long time now and has helped them chart their way through some very choppy seas in terms of car makers getting hold of the chips they need. Staying with Tesla, people aren't betting on the company to fail as much anymore, once the most shorted stock in the NASDAQ, as people were heavily betting against Tesla. Now it looks like most of them have given up the ghost and moved on to something else, says Electrek. Over the years, Tesla's been the target of high-profile short sellers, people that made their name on shorting companies like Enron, but now no longer. They've lost millions on their bets against the electric car maker. But until recently, they were holding on. Now it appears to have changed as the short interest on Tesla's stock has crumbled. It's now an all-time low. It was the most shorted stock on the market at one point, but the short percentage steadily fell over the last 12 months. Bloomberg reporting the percentage of stock borrowed by traders, a standard measure of short interest, has slumped to 1.1%. of Tesla's shares available for trading, according to IHS Market, as of last week. That's the lowest since 2010. That, of course, is when they went public, so the lowest ever. And a final story today on Tesla. I've seen lots of people commenting about this and asking me about it, and so, you know, I'll bring it to you as part of the news. Don't want to focus too heavily on it. Tesla has been ordered by a court to pay a former black employee $137 million in damages. This was over racist abuse by colleagues whilst he was working for Tesla, says the Daily Telegraph. In a legal claim against Tesla, he said, and I quote, "Tesla's progressive image was a facade papering over its regressive, demeaning treatment of African-American employees," end quote. Mr. Diaz alleged that despite his complaints to supervisors, Tesla took no action over the racist abuse. A jury in San Francisco awarded $130 million in damages and $7 million for emotional distress. Tesla replied by posting a blog, an excerpt of which reads, "The Tesla of 2015 and 16 is not the same as the Tesla of today. Since then, Tesla has added an employee relations team dedicated to investigating employee complaints. Tesla has added a diversity, equity, and inclusion team dedicated to ensuring that employees have the equal opportunity to excel at Tesla. And Tesla now has a comprehensive employee handbook, which replaced the anti-handbook, where all of our HR policies, employee protections, and ways to report issues are published in one easy-to-find online document. We acknowledge that we still have work to do to ensure that every employee feels they can bring their whole self to work at Tesla. And as I posted in July, we will continue to remind everyone who enters the Tesla workplace that any discriminatory slurs, no matter the intent or who is using them, will not be tolerated. Thank you for all you do at Tesla. Valerie, VP of People." So that was the reply. And yeah, just so much commentary I've seen online today from, God, it's the worst side of the Tesla community. Just people saying, what's the difference between rap music or black people using the N-word on themselves or at each other? And yet in a workplace, that's not tolerated. This is unfair. And it's because of Elon Musk. And, you know, it's been a pretty horrible debate to watch today from people that are defending racism because they've like sworn an allegiance to a car company. Really, people, take a look at yourself. It's just a company. I know you're a fan, but come on, get your priorities right. Most people are in the middle. And then, of course, there's the other side, the people who don't like the company. Again, take a look at yourselves. That blame, like, literally everything on Elon Musk. Like, the fact that he didn't stop this. And I don't know, how many people work at Tesla? 40, 50,000 people now. Back in 2015, what was it? But still, like, can a CEO know exactly what every work person is saying on the workshop floor? You know, absolutely not. Right, don't want to talk too much more about that on the podcast today. Obviously, it was a massive story that involved the world's biggest EV maker, so we have to talk about it. But just for inclusion, it's in the show, and hopefully you've not seen too much of that commentary that I've seen today, which I will now be wiping from my mind as I go away and try not to think about some of the horrible things that people have said today on the issues of race and colour and inclusion, etc. Right, okay, let's move on. Question of the week, by the way, is being rested for a week with eMobilityNorway.com. Returns on Sunday when you can join in again. Thank you to all of our Patreon family, new people signing up every day. And I really couldn't do this podcast at the time that I put into it without having you as financially supporting the show and putting it on the air for the other thousands of people every day who enjoy it for free. So thank you very much. Our premier partners are Phil Roberts, Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii. Derek Riley from the EV Review Island YouTube channel. Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, and emobilitynorway.com. Have a good one, see you tomorrow, and remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.